Hello, you're listening to the Sunday Show Tunes podcast. I'm Paul.
And I'm Maureen. This week, we'll be chatting with not one, but two West End leading men. Simon Bailey about Moulin Rouge and Nadim Naaman about his new musical, Broken Wings.
Broken Wings, based on the best-selling novelist Cahil Gibran's The Prophets, poetic book, and with a beautiful original score from Middle Eastern duo Nadim Naaman and Dana Al-Fard. And this moving production will open in London's West End later this month. We are thrilled that friend of the show, Nadim, is with us now. Hi, Nadim, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, it's lovely to have you. It's our pleasure. So tell us about Broken Wings. We are super excited about this.
So Broken Wings is a musical adaptation of a novel by Khalil Gibran. And for those who don't know Khalil Gibran, he is the third best-selling poet of all time. And like myself, he is of Lebanese heritage. And Gibran is probably most famous for a book he wrote called The Prophet, which has sold millions and millions of copies. I think it's over 10 million copies in North America alone. And The Prophet was huge across the world in the 50s and 60s because it was one of the first books that was basically about equality and tolerance and peace between all religions and all faiths and all genders. And he was basically writing in a way that was totally taken up by the hippie movement at the time. There's a great story about Elaine Page using The Prophet in her research for her production of Hair when she was in Hair. So that's how she got into Gibran. So Broken Wings is the first book he wrote, and it's basically a journal or a diary type novel about the one summer of his life he went back to Lebanon and fell in love for the first time. And it's a story about sort of juggling your love and your heart and feelings and desires with the traditions and customs of a society that sort of forbids that love. So whilst it's in this case about arranged marriage, the themes very much ring true into the 21st century with things like gender equality and sexuality and, you know, sort of gay rights. And it's a very relatable story.
Very big deal in the Middle East.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what inspired you to write a musical about it?
I think that in the first instance, there were two reasons. The first reason was because the Middle East has become a place full of theatres and concert halls, and it has many orchestras and sort of drama schools and things like that. But what it doesn't have is a kind of catalogue of its own material. It has a history of importing shows from the West, basically. So if you go to places like Beirut or Dubai or Doha, even now Saudi Arabia, of all places, you know, these are places that have musicals from the West End and Broadway. And they're all the shows that we've seen 20 times. Mamma Mia, Wicked, Les Mis, Phantom. Even Chicago now has reached Dubai. I think it's there at the moment. So we thought, they've got all these facilities, and they have an interest in theatre. So why not start telling some stories from that part of the world? But then with Broken Wings more specifically, if you read the book itself reads a bit like a play. It's very short. You can read it in a day or so. And it's written in very short chapters that feel like scenes. And then, of course, because Gibran is a poet, when he gets going about the romance and the beauty of the landscape and the emotional side of it, he writes very lyrically, and he makes a lot of reference to music and singing and song. So it just felt like a really natural thing to do, to adapt this writing and set it to song. And hopefully when people hear the score, if they've not heard it yet, they will hear that the poetry lends itself really well to music.
Oh, I just think now, you wrote it, but you're also starring in it. So is that a tricky balance? Because I know a lot of times when they're doing a show, you know, they kind of, it's better if the writer isn't there. Does that make
you know, sense? I think there are two answers to this question.
We're asking Nadeem why he feels it's better that he is there, where most people,
exactly. You
basically said most people would wish he wasn't. This is a great question.
You're completely right. If you ask my cast, there'll be a different answer to the one I'm about to give you. And then, listen, I think that it's a really valid point. I think that normally I would be inclined to agree that it's quite unusual for a writer to be present in a process. But with new musicals, I think it might be slightly different, or new plays, or when it's new work and the piece is still being tweaked and shaped and finessed, I think it's really valuable to have the writer around to collaborate with the director and the actors to find the right energy and arc to the story. One day I would love this show to just exist without me being anywhere near it, and then I can go and watch it and just be proud of what we created. But what also works in this particular instance is that Gibran himself is a writer, the character is a writer, and the framework of the musical is him narrating from the future, looking back at the past. So although I'm in it, I don't interact with any other human beings in the show. I only interact with the audience, and then the rest of the cast play scenes amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's a sort of a good hybrid, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm around, but I'm not interfering with other scenes. I'm sort of on the outskirts of it.
Hmm. So you mentioned the rest of the cast there. You have a great cast assembled for the show. What are the challenges of casting a show like this in particular?
I think that the main challenge is the thing that you want to embrace the most, which is that you have an opportunity to tell a story from a certain part of the world with a degree of authenticity. Mm-hmm. That the West End isn't used to. And if you get it right, what it does is it means that your audience becomes more diverse than ever before. And the chain effect of that is that if you have a really diverse audience and you inspire people from other parts of the world to enjoy theatre and feel that they can relate to theatre, then you are in the long run creating a new generation of not only theatre goers, but potential actors, directors, writers, designers, etc. So, you know, a lot of the debate about diversity in casting often focuses on telling people off and not casting more diversely. But
yeah.
I actually think the problem is wider reaching than that. And the problem is that in my Middle Eastern culture and other cultures still look at the arts as a hobby or something that you do when you're a kid, but then eventually you grow up and you get a proper job and you leave it behind.
Right.
And we want to break that stereotype and encourage young performers and musicians, etc., to see the arts as a noble career. And I don't think you can do that unless you're putting something on stage that they relate exactly. Mm. So I think that if we want more diversity in our theatres, we have to reach the communities that the youngsters are encouraged to get involved growing up, because it's all very well saying we need more diversity, but if the pool of people going to drama school is still so predominantly white, European and American, then we aren't going to get there without forcing it. We want to do it naturally, you know.
Nadeem, sadly, we are out of time. We love having you on the show. So thank you very much for taking some time to chat with us this afternoon. And we cannot wait to see you at Charing Cross Theatre.
It's a huge pleasure. Thank you for the support as always, and see you soon.
Broken Wings is at Charing Cross Theatre in London from the 11th of February to the 26th of March. For tickets and more information, head over to charingcrosstheatre.co.uk.
Actor Simon Bailey, whose credits include Les Miserables, The Phantom of the Opera, Jersey Boys and Heathers, is currently starring as the Duke in Moulin Rouge. We are thrilled that Simon is with us now. Hi, Simon, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
We are thrilled to have you on Sunday Show Tunes. Really,
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Absolutely our pleasure. So tell us what we can expect from the spectacle that is Moulin Rouge.
Well, and more the question to be, what shouldn't you expect from Moulin Rouge? it is genuinely the most phenomenal theatrical experience that I think I've certainly ever been a part of. And it's great we're doing this interview now, because I had the chance to watch a run through of it yesterday. So for the first time, I'd actually seen the show live in the theatre. And it's just, I was honestly speechless by the end of it. It's It's just such a wonderful production. It's obviously, it's an adaptation of the amazing film from 2001. And it's a theatrical film in itself. And it lends itself very well to the stage. And it's just incredible. I mean, phenomenal, yeah.
It just looks epic from any images or video you can see. It just seems like the most epic thing. Was it an out-of-body experience for you watching the show that you're in?
Completely it was. I mean, it's not very often you get the chance to see something that you're in, obviously, you know. So it was a really lovely experience to do that. Obviously, I was aware of, whilst we had a little temporary break, our little COVID visited us a couple of times. So what they did was once the show was reopened, I still had a few days left to isolate. So our company manager very kindly arranged for us to have a live stream. So we could actually watch it, because that's how, obviously, all of our, well, the majority of our creatives are all in America or, right. You know, putting productions right. On elsewhere. So they have a live stream so they can kind of check in on and see how we're getting on. And we jumped on the live stream. And whilst, it still blew me away, but watching it through an iPad is one thing. But being completely surrounded and being, you know, enveloped by the Moulin Rouge in its entirety was phenomenal.
And it really is all-encompassing because the set design is all around you. Now, I want to go back to, I know at Christmas time, there were like starts and stops and, you know, yeah. How did that impact the cast on the whole? How did you guys rally?
I'll be honest with you, it was difficult. I mean, we have been working and had been at that stage, we've been working exceptionally hard. We were out of rehearsals. We were in tech rehearsals, obviously. It's a massive show, so there are a lot of technical elements to it. We were working every single hour that God was sending us, and then doing some previews in the evening. And we were getting towards that opening, you know, which was the guiding light. And then all of a sudden, we just got hit. And I think it knocked us quite dramatically, because we tried the measures. I know everyone says this, but the measures that are in place in theatres now are phenomenal. We have three COVID officers, mm-hmm. where we test with these very, very highly sensitive flow tests every single day. We register these things. Everything is cleaned. And I watch the level of work to which people clean individual props. It's, you know, there is no stone left unturned. And I think we got, I think it was the 4th of December or something, if I'm right, or 5th, that we had to temporarily close. Our opening was supposed to be on the 8th. So we were so close. But, you know, these things happen, I think. And I think after a while, we realize these things do happen, especially in the time that we're living at the minute. And I do honestly want to say that the producers were absolutely phenomenal. It was people over profit. And
yeah. Oh, nice.
We know that theatre sometimes isn't, or the entertainment industry isn't like that. But they made, we had Zooms every day to make sure that we were okay. They were asking, I can't say.
Good to hear.
Yeah, it's
that
phenomenal.
That is really good to hear. Yeah,
good to hear. Yeah. Simon, tell us about your role in the show.
So I play the Duke. The Duke is really the foil, I suppose, to the two leads, well, to Christian and him falling in love with Satine. The Duke is the man of stock. He is, I think we kind of meet him as a bit of a kind of rich playboy, I think. You know, he's attracted to the shiniest things. I like him.
You play him very well, I may say.
I wouldn't necessarily call him the villain of the piece, but I suppose when everyone else is so good, you can see why he might be deemed as the bad guy of the piece. He is, more than anything else, he is an absolute joy to play. That's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah. You know, I have so much fun with these people, in this role anyway, especially. But these people, this cast is all, they're all phenomenal human beings. Everybody in the building, actually, it really is one big happy family.
Oh, that's great.
One, There isn't one bad egg. Well, everyone said, you know, if you can't find the one bad person, then maybe it's you. So I wonder if people my bag. Yeah, exactly. Maybe I should check what's being said in the corridors before I start saying too much more.
There's some cracking tunes in Moulin Rouge. Which one's your favourite?
Well, I mean, the opening is a phenomenon because it's a non-stop roller coaster of so many different songs. But I think for me, I think the opening of Act Two, Backstage Romance, with all the entails, and there's Toxic that pops in, and I think Backstage Romance is something to behold. A musically, but B visually, it's the most phenomenal opening to an act. And I get the lucky part of my job is I get sometimes, because they play, I'm sitting in boxes and, you know, I watch these things as part of the show, so I get to watch it every single day, and it's it genuinely blows my mind every time.
It's the choreography is absolutely spectacular.
Yeah,
it Sonia is.
She's a different breed, really. And, you know, the way her mind works, because we were lucky enough to have her come over, I think it was during technical, I think she came right at the beginning of tech, and she came in, and the way, now, I think, and people, the audience will probably be grateful of this, but I don't dance too much in this show, so everyone
you kind of strut across the stage.
I do a lot of swagger walking, which I think we're fine with. So everyone can book your tickets, knowing with the full knowledge that I'm not going to be gracing the dance floor too often. But Sonia, the way her mind works is phenomenal. It's a really truly personal experience, and I think all of the dancers, which is basically everyone else apart from me in the show, all the dancers really, they connected with her in such a way. And you could see she has a way of, you know, in terms of being such a good creative, you have to have a good narrative. And I think, you know, the way that she talks and she explains not just what's happening physically, but what's happening emotionally, and the way you marry those two together, was you could just see everybody was completely inspired and completely engaged with her every time she spoke. And it really shows. It really shows, because, you know, the show is treated with such love and care across the board that it's almost impossible not to.
Hmm. Yeah, it is a sight to behold completely. Okay, so you have been around for quite a while, yeah, and we have seen you in Jersey
Seriously,
Boys.
Maureen.
I know, sorry. Well, he's like one of the West End lovies. I mean,
yeah, okay, backpedal.
Yeah, I'm going backpedal. He, you know,
I'm quite enjoying it though. Yeah, I'm quite enjoying to see where you're going to go.
I know, but
me
I
too,
would,
Simon.
What is the best advice? You've been in the West End, you know, doing lots of big shows. What is the best advice that anyone has ever given you, or you would give to someone who was starting out?
Gosh, I mean, to be honest, I always have this mantra of never give up. I think it's never take no for an answer. And also, because there's a few stories that I have about some big shows that I was in, but I wasn't supposed to be in, you know, and, you know, the times when you're told no, and you get back on the phone and you say, you're wrong. You're wrong. And I have back in. You know, and that might, you know, that's not often, again, you know, we were talking a bit before this interview, but it's not necessarily in our DNA to do that. But I think when you have a gut feeling about something, it's not just, you know, I think I should be in this. It's more of I have to be in this, or I'm so ripe for this, and I need people to realize that, you know, because like it's a very tough industry. Mm. And sometimes you have to dig your heels in and you have to just kind of stand in the way and say, you need to look at this again. And pick your battles with that, obviously. You can't do that every single time, because as we all know, you know, the word you're going to hear in this industry more than anything else is no. So you have to, when you know that that's, if that feels right, then I think you take it. But if something feels wrong, I think you should stand your ground. Never give up. Work hard. work hard and be nice, I think is just the simplest, and that's just in life.
Those are great.
Good advice. We've got time for one more quick question. What was the first show or musical theatre song that influenced you most when you were growing up and made you go, I want to do this?
Empty Chairs, Empty Tables by Michael Ball.
That was a quick answer. That was good.
Because there's literally nothing else. Michael Ball was, still is, was such a hero of mine. And I was kind of starting to, I've always loved musical theatre and I loved it. My parents took me to lots of shows as a kid. But when I started to have like musical theatre albums and all that stuff, and I was starting to sing along with them in my bedroom at home, that would always be the one that I would sing. And, there was always a dream to be in Les Mis, potentially to sometimes meet or work with Michael Ball. Some dreams do come true because luckily I was able to do both of those things.
Amazing.
But Michael Ball was always, he was my vocal hero for
Amazing.
Sure.
Simon Bailey, thank you so much for taking time with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stay safe.
You too.
And you can see Simon in Moulin Rouge at London's Piccadilly Theatre.
Well, that's it for this episode. We'd like to say a huge thank you to Nadine Norman and Simon Bailey for joining us.
If you've enjoyed listening, don't forget to subscribe on your favorite listening platform.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Maureen.
And you've been listening to the Sunday Show Tunes podcast.
Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye.